Good morning. I work for the Tobacco Prevention and Evaluation Program in the School of Medicine in the Department of Family Medicine, which provides comprehensive evaluation services for tobacco programs. The Tobacco Prevention and Evaluation Program was contracted by the North Carolina Health and Wellness Trust Fund Commission to provide evaluation for this North Carolina Tobacco-Free Colleges initiative. So I'll provide information about the initiative, which has the goal of accelerating the rate of a 100% tobacco-free policy adoption on college campuses in North Carolina. This initiative, as I said, is funded by the North Carolina Health and Wellness Trust Fund Commission, which administers a portion of the Master Settlement Agreement to make North Carolina stronger, both physically and economically, through health promotion. First, I'll give you a brief overview of the epidemiology of tobacco use among college students. Then I will describe the initiative, and after that, I will give you some of the recommendations we have for giving evidence-based technical assistance to college campuses interested in policy change. And we'll close with the results to date. First order of business, I have no personal financial relationships with commercial interest relevant to this presentation to disclose. In the 1990s, we saw an increase in tobacco use among college students. College students have a higher prevalence of tobacco use than the general population, which continues, as you can see from this Monitoring the Future survey data of smoking in the past year, to be well above the healthy campus objective of 10.5% current smoking. So, among college students, there are a number of characteristics important to campus-based prevention and cessation initiatives. Of foremost concerns is sort of this environment in which college students find themselves. This is an environment in which there's a social context in which smoking, and more recently the hookah bar, is more accepted, particularly on weekends. Also key is a marketing environment in which college students are targeted through bar and venue-based industry promotions. Additionally, we find college students' perceptions of cigarette risk from low-level smoking that underestimate that risk. So this is a combination of social activities, marketing, and perceived risk that may explain why some one-fourth of college student smokers became regular smokers after age 19, and this also informs our initiative. So phase one of this initiative started in January 2006 and ran through December 2007, and that's the phase I'm reporting on today. The Health and Wellness Trust Fund provides technical assistance to all campuses in the state, including those not funded by this initiative. We evaluate only the outcomes of the funded grantees and campuses. And just to note, a couple grantees oversee multiple campuses. Phase one was funded with $1.6 million. So this is all guided, and our evaluation is guided and based in this logic model, which I know you can't really read from back there, but just wanted to know there was a logic model, and in yellow on it is what we're really interested in, which is the adoption of 100% tobacco-free policies or comprehensive campus policies as well. Now, this focus on policy change in North Carolina was made possible only recently by legislative changes in the state. We are a state with preemption, meaning counties and cities cannot regulate tobacco in public spaces, and the university systems and community colleges fell under that preemption until 2006 for community colleges and 2008 fully for the University of North Carolina system. So we worked in this initiative focused on four activities. One, establishing and strengthening campus coalitions. Two, advocating for policy change and policy compliance in three areas: tobacco use, tobacco sales, and tobacco marketing on campus. And three, promotion of Quitline North Carolina. And four, targeting priority populations to ensure diverse representation in coalitions, policy adoption, and Quitline promotion. These priority populations covered nine different groups, or eight, some number of groups, A through H. Not all students fall into a one-size-fits-all tobacco prevention and cessation intervention. So we identified these priority populations partly based on what other people are doing and their sort of best practices, but also due to elevated tobacco use prevalence, So you find that particularly in for lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender students. Every study shows these astronomical rates of tobacco use or astronomical prevalence of tobacco use. Two, barriers to cessation services. And three, tobacco use characteristics that need special attention. So this might be the use of little cigars by black students, smoking to be thin by women, or smokeless tobacco use by athletes. So sort of everyone who doesn't fall into this one-size-fits-all tobacco approach. We provided sort of our recommendations for evidence-based technical assistance. So grantees are encouraged to use a standard public health practice of assessment, policy development, and assurance. Assessment includes surveys on smoking prevalence, surveys on compliance with policies, and surveys about attitudes towards smoking policies. Policy development here includes building broad, diverse coalitions from around campus to advocate for policy change for 100% tobacco-free campuses. Others considering college-based prevention and cessation programs should consider the current evidence that knowledge alone is of little to no use, that self-help materials are of little to no use unless tailored for individuals, and, importantly, that the promotion of the quitline and nicotine replacement therapy are both integral parts of this. So nicotine replacement therapy in a recent Cochrane review can increase the chances of quitting by some 50 to 70%. Not which are many findings, but that's a systematic review. In the initiative's case, grantees also worked with campus healthcare providers to promote the use of the 5As in campus health services and to promote the use of a fax referral system to the quitline for students. In developing 100% tobacco-free policies and campus policies, we think it's important to remember that the evidence base suggests that only 100% tobacco-free policies, the entire campus, reduce the prevalence of smoking on campus. So partial bans may be effective in reducing exposure to secondhand smoke, but only 100% fully tobacco-free campuses have been evaluated and found to reduce the prevalence of smoking. Now, we did technical assistance in a variety of ways, starting with a needs assessment, tailored trainings, visited with people in their spaces, brought people to a statewide meeting, and provided phone, email, technical assistance. Our evaluation strategy involved a baseline survey conducted at the beginning of the initiative in which we assessed current policies, campus characteristics, and the status of any current initiatives on campus. In addition to monitoring the activities shown on my logic model earlier, we focused the reporting system on capturing policy changes. And in doing that, we focused specifically on 100% tobacco-free policies. We capture all of them, but we go through a specially rigorous process of ensuring that we are correctly capturing the 100% tobacco-free ones. Since the reduction of health disparities is a goal of the Health and Wellness Trust Fund Commission, we have 6 indicators tracking progress in building representative and diverse coalitions and promoting the quit line through our priority populations. And this all goes into a customized website with a sort of database backend that I can track through. So to give you a tour of that database, sort of, I realize this is not the most flashy of websites, but it does get the job done. We have a sort of an entry page. Grantees pick who they are and what date they're submitting. It's all password protected. Grantees enter data through 7 sections. This is a policy section. Obviously, depending on what you tell us, we ask for more details or less details given that. And then a separate section, it works for the evaluation team and the grants managers of the Health and Wellness Trust Fund, in which we can download straight into Excel and get some graphs directly out of this and whatnot. So moving on to results, we have 53 policy adoptions in this period, including 12 new tobacco-free or comprehensive campus policies, which we're very proud of in North Carolina. And we also sort of follow the number of young adult callers who are college students who call the quit line, but there's a lot of stuff going on in the quit line in our state, difficult to tell how much of that is due to us. Policy adoption, we have a fairly steady growth in the number of new policies adopted each quarter, as you can see from the slope on this graph. And just to point out, the types of policies adopted span quite a variety, from student organization policies to comprehensive campus policies to specific ones that regulate the sale of tobacco products on the campus. But the greatest number come from our tobacco-free 100% policies. So in North Carolina, we have a passive surveillance system for non-funded campuses that are not using health and wellness, that are not using the technical assistance provided by the Health and Wellness Trust Fund. From this, you can see prior to this initiative, we had one college in North Carolina, Bennett College in Guilford County, which was 100% tobacco-free. And by the end of quarter three of the phase two of the initiative, we will have some 17 different campuses in the state that are 100% tobacco-free in the case of community colleges and private colleges, and that have a comprehensive 100-foot ban of smoking on the UNC system schools. Now, the reason is the state only allows UNC system schools to regulate tobacco, smoking, within 100 feet of each building on campus. So they obviously cannot go fully tobacco-free. As for recommendations, we think it's important to make sure that the evaluation indicators are capturing activities that are effective, and only those activities. So we attempted to preemptively weed out activities like, say, passing out pizza at a movie party that we don't think are effective. And we did this in a variety of ways. We first have a rigorous code book, but code books are only as useful as if people read them and to make sure that the indicator references are being followed. So in our evaluation system, any question, if you double-click on that question, you get the definition will pop up and tell you exactly what you're supposed to enter in that system. And so we worked very hard to enforce that through our data cleaning process as well. Now, two common themes that run through our quarterly recommendations from our evaluation and monitoring and evaluation reports are to share policy successes with other stakeholders and with state officials and agencies and elected representatives, and to encourage the promotion of policy adoption in areas frequented by young adults near campuses. Both of those are things that we haven't really seen being reported to us as by grantees in their activities. So sort of to close and sum up, the college and university student population is an important part of tobacco control policy, of comprehensive tobacco control policies. You all know this, you're here. Nonetheless, future programs should consider young adults not enrolled in college. So while I'm saying all of this about college students, I would like to point out the prevalence of smoking among college students is much lower than the prevalence of smoking among students not enrolled in college. And additionally, we believe that ensuring representation from a diverse coalition of students, administrators, faculty, and staff from around campus is a key part of effective policy change on college campuses. Thank you.